welcome to another edition of the Zoom with Our Feet podcast, the pod about learning photography with me, your host, T-Mac, a professional photographer, videographer, and teacher. In golf, April is like no other, as it is Masters Month. If there's a high-profile golf tournament going on, the other golf pros are working hard behind the scenes to make these technological wonders come to life. On this episode of the Zoom Pod, director Emmett Loughran joins me to talk about his work directing television golf and live stage productions in New York City. This month, our guest speakers are all about TV golf. Let's talk to the other pros. Emmett Loughran, welcome to the Zoom with Our Feet podcast. How are you?
Hey, Mac. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Good to see you, my friend.
It's been a few.
So tell me about your formative years in TV. How did your journey start?
It's a good question. It's a great question, but there's no formula to any of this, as you know. So we're not like carpenters who watch and then become carpenters. So I was in high school. People said, oh, you have a good voice. So I found a college that had a good radio program, and that was my path. Till Professor Morrison sat with me and said, we have this new TV program starting up, a station that's going to have its own soap opera and morning news and a yoga program, and they need a crew. So instead of the classroom, give it a go. I said, sure. So that's how it all started many, many, many moons ago.
Several presidential administrations ago.
Exactly.
How did directing television born from that? How did that happen?
Yeah, it followed, I think, a logical plan. I was a camera guy like yourself. I loved it. Thought I'd be a camera guy forever. So, and then someone said, we have this position in the truck where you switch the show, the technical director. I said, sure, I'll give that a go. And I did some replay in the truck back in the days when our replay machine was 30 seconds only. So, but enjoyed it. Enjoyed all that. But as I was, exactly, you got it. But the technical director's seat was right next to the director, and no names, but some were screamers and some were calm and collected and actually got more out of their crew that way. So by osmosis, that just came my way. And people said, oh, you might make a good director. And sure, I said, I'll give that a go. And I had camera meetings, not knowing what I was saying. You know, it's such a different world when you become a director. But like anything, the more you do it, the better you get. So I took most of the good qualities of what I had sat next to individuals, and then you find out how valuable your crew is. It's ironic when you first become a director of three or four cameras, you have a very green crew. And that's really when you need real good people, maybe helping the cause. Meanwhile, but you'll learn from that, and you find people's strengths, and you pull what they do, and make them feel good about the job they're doing, because they're working as hard as they can, and that's so you can ask the people. So, and then that evolved to just directing and really enjoying it.
If you treat the crew right, I want to run through fire for you.
And they will.
And they will. And
they're carrying a camera on their shoulder or pumping it up an 80-foot tower at Bay Hill, you know, standing as the wind is 40 miles an hour and holding a steadier shot than you could ever ask for. And or if you're treating them poorly, they'll just zoom out to a wide shot and kind of hang out. They're not going to help. They're not going to listen to the announcers in their ear, sell the shots, things, you know what I'm talking about. So
I do indeed. So in that time, TD, which in and of itself is quite the, has become quite quite the gig as well. So you make the
scary one if you come.
Yeah. Gosh, I look at the boards now and I just marvel at what they've become.
Sure. A TD can hit just one button, it'll take the camera, it'll trigger an EVS machine, a graphic machine will run, a sound effect will be cued and played. All that power, but you have to be able to set it up accordingly and build your timeline and all those things. So it's not just ready one, take one.
So in those early years of directing, you've made that transition, you see that job. Did anyone influence you?
Good question. There's a handful of directors that I took positives out of. Jim Cross, who went on to Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, but he was a live sports director early on. Larry Cavallina, who became a top CBS director. Don Allmeyer, I was fortunate to sit next to Don quite a few times, Skins Games. But also Lou Horvitz, who directed the Oscars. Glenn Weiss, who directs Tonys and Oscars. Got a lot out of the entertainment. And also a European director, Brian Lawrence, who was the first opera director I knew. So, and that evolved to the current director I know, Gary Halverson. Gary, who directed Friends and Everyone Loves Raymond, Thanksgiving Day Parade, but also directed The Ring Cycle. So, amazing amount of talent I was blessed to be next to, and hopefully took something out of each one. Selfishly, I did.
And I tell folks all the time, this is like sports especially, but live television work is almost a subset of a subset in terms of specialties within a specialty.
So many individuals are so good at what they do. And directors like myself are blessed to be able to enjoy everything that they come up by.
Yeah. I'll agree. So what year and what was your very first golf show? How did that transition happen?
It was the mid-80s. ESPN was just being created. And then I put a call into them. I was a camera guy, very good. The Islanders had kept us very busy in New York at that time, winning Stanley Cups. So we all got very good at what we do in the basketball, hockey. But then the golf thing, I love playing golf. That intrigued me. And then ESPN had the Champions Tour, known as the Senior Tour way back then. As well as some PGA team events. So I got on that crew. And it was a great challenge, you know, following the golf ball. You know it very well.
Yes, I do. So now you are doing some golf. Let me set some context. I would love to hear your description of what is the job, the role of the director in a live broadcast. You could fill in the sport, but we're talking golf. So what is the director's job on a golf broadcast?
Sure. The key to a good director is a good producer. The producer tells a story. He, a plan of the coverage. The director paints that picture of what the producer wants. So obviously before show day, you huddle with your production team and your announce team. You find out the storylines, the tee times maybe that are going to be in our broadcast window. At least we have a plan. Then the beauty of golf and the trap of golf in a way is there's no TV timeouts, more than one ball in play. So anything can happen. And the expanse of the golf course, I don't have to tell you, it's not a football field or a basketball court. So with that in mind, you try to attack and have coverage, traditional coverage, but you have to have some free safeties also, ready to chase any story that's finishing on the front nine, let's say. And when you chase it, you might have a camera, two cameras in mind, but you have to get an audio pack out there, scoring people to keep you up to date on who's away. So a lot of facets come together. And obviously, screaming people is the last thing, as these people now have to hump a camera, tripod, backpack. Way back in the, you know, the day they had the antenna, it was a multi-person crew. So the key is just to deploy the troops, have a plan of the day. Have your producer, anything, things change, or maybe the director sees a storyline developing, someone's like, birdie, then you say, hey, you want me to start chasing that? And then you steal from one plot that you had thought out, and then you deploy those troops on the new storyline. But still keeping the tournament covered, because people are just finishing, whether it's a name player who's having a great day or maybe not going to make the cut, you need coverage at 18 and or 9 if you're finishing on the front. So just have to have some basics always in play, but then have the ability to chase a story or two or three as they develop.
There is, from my perspective, having listened to all you directors over the years, there is this, it is the ultimate multitasker job, but it's also, I think, you have to synthesize, I'm going all teacher on you, information quickly, and then make decisions, as you said, about what to cover, which comes from that story part, and then how to cover it. Correct?
Correct, yep. Exactly. And you're going to have to steal for something. You just want to borrow facilities because you're limited budgets, exactly. Hopefully you have plenty of good toys to play with, but and you just have to make those decisions, and then maybe equipment's breaking down, and then you have to bypass a piece of gear. And you have to just trust those people on that, that they're the best people putting out that fire. And you just move on and you say, hey, we'll put those graphics in later when it airs, or whatever the situation is. But that makes it fun as well. When you walk out of the truck after a good broadcast, you actually know if it was good or not. You get instant feedback. So,
Yeah. Oh, totally true. You've directed other sports. How, specifically golf, how does that differ from some of the other events? You actually touched on part of it for me. I tell people that golf, Super Bowl is a Super Bowl, but it's one field. Golf has 18 fields that have to be covered in a tournament. That's one thing. What else do you think differs in live golf than other sports from your perspective as a director?
Mm-hmm. Well, possibly Super Bowl, I can imagine how many monitors Mike Arnold, people like that have. You know, with golf, you have a lot of feeds. The ability to scan, whether it's just beauty shots or pretty putts, you know, that's the challenge of golf. But with football, basketball, it depends if you just have your 5-camera coverage or you can have 55-camera coverage, you know. So each one magnifies, but it comes down to some core cameras, core facilities that always have to be in play. So you just have to, you're listening to people that are giving you clues that they're in trouble, let's say. But the key also is all the prep. You can't find out Thursday that there's a tree limb blocking the back left pin. You know, that's all the prep that you do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's a lot of homework and it's redundant, but it goes from communications, making sure people see you, make sure they get tallies that they can hear, make sure they have program sound, make sure they can hear the announcers, which really makes you look good because they're getting you shots based on what they're hearing. The announcers are talking about the grip, things like that. So I kind of swing the conversation back to golf, but that all relates to basketball. If the announcer's talking about a certain thing, guy's fingering his left ankle, let's say, camera guys are going to nail that shot for you. You know, not the game camera because he's busy covering. So you have to give people all the tools of the trade that they need to be the best they are, and then they'll make you the best you are as well.
So besides some snacks and a comfy chair, what is something you need when you need to have part of your kit? We photographers like to talk about when you sit down in that chair. What else do you need?
I like the snack part. Definitely, you're talking a lot, so you need lozenges. You just need water. That's an important part of it. Keep the eyeglasses clean throughout the show. The ability to hear people is the key. There's a lot of channels to listen to. Not all have to be at the same level, so there's a balance. And you want to hear your announcers. You want to hear them on talkback when they're not on the air, but they want to communicate that they're noticing something's going on the playing field. You need the TD to be very comfortable in what he does, and he or she does. Same with the sound department and your tape room, which is now all digital media, graphics. Just make sure everyone hears each other and everything's working on their end, and then you're off. And then there's no script, and that's the beauty of it, actually.
And there's no stopping.
Exactly. Yep, and no timeouts. More than one ball in play, but that makes golf specifically fun.
I think also degree of difficulty on Thursday and Friday, especially at an open where there's, as you said, wall-to-wall coverage, you have golfers starting on both tees. So everywhere you point, there's golf. How does that, on a Thursday and a Friday at the Open, how does that up the ante in terms of coverage? What is that like for a director?
Yeah, it's ante's a perfect word, Tim. It's a different mindset. Thursday, Friday, you have cameras covering both nines because to your viewers, you have 144 golfers, let's say. They just can't tee off the first tee. The days are not long enough. So they tee them off, and not in twosomes like they will on the weekend, but threesomes off both tees. So you have golfers on the first and 10th, and the marquee names, along with TV and the tour, you know, they try to put them in that window. But you can have a golfer that's a rookie or maybe an amateur that got in on a sponsor exemption, and that already happened this year. Golfer named Dunlap won the Amex. So anybody can win on every given weekend. So and those stories can develop on Thursday and Friday, which is very fun. It could be the first tee. It could be on the 10th tee of the first group. So you try to capture that. And someone's all of a sudden breaking out. You try to chase that. But still have your stable coverage to provide good coverage just on the tournament itself.
Golf fans, and I've heard that, you know, when I was in the thick of it, I would hear it all the time. People would say, it's so amazing that you're just wiping and showing golf, but the sausage making and the real story is a director and a producer are blending live golf with recorded golf. Explain that phenomenon and how it really is the engine that makes it all go.
Right. Again, to our viewer today, golf is happening all the time, unlike just the one ball. So as a result, maybe half the golf you see on your TV maybe happened 30 seconds ago. And that's accepted. We don't try to play it off that we're live and we're perfect getting everything. We'll just say a moment ago, you know, that kind of thing. And that's okay. I think the educated viewer accepts that. But when you dive deeper, that pre-recorded shot had camera cuts. And you're trusting a replay director to make cuts that you kind of hit that what he or she can do. So that's a little microorganism itself, which is exciting because that person is doing different subsets of my coverage and doing a good job of it too. So and communicating to cameras and audio people with audio packs. So it's a lot behind the scenes, just like you hinted at. When it all comes together, it's extraordinary.
I liken it to steal an opera term. I like it, liken it to a symphony, and you're the conductor, and there's sections, and everybody's playing. Everybody's playing hard, and you are conducting, give me a little more, right, and all of that.
That's
and
right.
And I think that sort of, that's what I've always said to people about, because I don't think even sort of more than casual golf fans don't really know the ins and outs of how 18 holes are covered, 144 mm-hmm. golfers, and how it all comes together, and that the sort of point is the director making sure that what's going out the air is out of the air is correct.
And again, you have to work. Director just can't do his own thing. Maybe he can, maybe in another sport. Golf, he can't. He really can't because the producer has a plan. He's in the ear of the announcer, just telling them what's next. And then the director is listening to that as well and planning how to segue to that storyline. So it's really such a team sport. And the intriguing thing is, my client these days, the PGA Tour, and as the director, I'm in a truck, but I'm 3,000 miles away from Pebble Beach now doing a show, which is kind of a new way to do TV. So I'm looking at a wall of monitors, just like if I was in the Pebble Beach parking lot, looking at a wall of monitors. But with the technology, the fiber optics that we have these days, I'm getting real-time outputs of all those camera people, and communication is real-time as if we're within half a mile of each other. So that's a whole new chapter in your world.
That was after I left. That's crazy to me that amount of bandwidth is sent from Monterey Peninsula to Jacksonville, Florida.
Yep, exactly.
That's just
it worked
crazy.
It worked so well. I miss meetings, dinners, hanging with my crew, of course. Don't have that. I miss driving out on the golf cart in the morning, let's say, just to see what the pins are for the day, or talk to tournament officials if there's situations. Things happen. There's notes to be given. Now we get them on a text versus a knock at the door. So, but to the viewer at home, I don't think they noticed any difference. So, meanwhile, I'm in the truck in the parking lot, like you said, in St. Augustine, and there's four different directors doing shows out of that one truck now. Unheard of, but it's easily done. Meanwhile, we have 20, 30 cameramen on site, each dial into whatever channel they need to be and providing a telecast for that director. Pretty amazing.
How many opens have you worked in any capacity?
Luckily, I've got to enjoy the world feed of the U.S. Open for the past 10 years. But I also did some British Opens where I took the feed and made it a feed for DirecTV or a feature group feed. So I didn't have the heavyweight lifting of directing the open coverage. But I got to enjoy the talent of those directors, listen to them, incorporate some of my cameras. And that was a story that we told. Like I said, it could be feature group or feature whole coverage, which just gives the viewers who are watching more than one screen these days, give them that option. And those are fun.
Here's a director style question. I have to tell you that it was not lost on me, and maybe it was just me observing a bunch of different directors, that you especially always tried to keep it light. And you had your some go-to things, and you made it light. How did you develop that? And I'm assuming it was by design.
It's a great question. I just, when I related earlier, when I was a TD in sports, I sat next to a lot of individuals directing that made everyone feel uptight. That's not you can't get the best out of people that way. Sure, lose power or audio goes dead. There's situations that raise the level in the truck. But in a perfect world, I always notice, and I think I'm a calm person anyway, but I'll get upset if someone's not doing their job. I'm not upset, but try to redirect their focus. And maybe they have a problem. Maybe they're left to uncover that their viewfinder is intermittent or something like that. So, but the key is just if you can be calm, it makes everyone else more relaxed, they'll perform better. It sounds like a simple formula, but it works. So, so far, I'm still able to do that. And
it's still working.
My crew, I think, will be waiting at the bottom of the stairs for me if it's not working.
Well, I can remember, and this is 1,000 years ago, there was a mini tour event at the course in Concord. I happened to be in between and was home and got booked, and it was the first time I had been on an Emmett show. And I can remember the first time. So in golf, the handheld's behind the golfer, but that shot, you can see the tower there in the distance. And in my ear, I hear the following from this guy, and said, "T-Mac, lift your left leg." It didn't register at first. And you said it again, kind of like fake serious. "T-Mac, lift your left leg." And I'm like, and everybody laughed, and and you go.
And you did it.
And I did it. And then you said something like, "Okay, everybody, back to work." And it was like, where did this guy come from? It was so cool.
I can tell you the brief story before that emanated. It's just Luther Fisher, a good friend of all of ours, he was a cameraman. And his parents, God rest their soul, would be watching broadcasts. And he would always say, "If you see me, I'll be the camera guy that lifts his leg. You'll know what camera I'm running that week." So sadly, I think Luther's parents passed, but we've continued. So even last week, we continue that tradition. And for all of us, we get it. We laugh. We had a great TD, you remember, Gary Rothman. Just, he's gone 30 years plus now already. But every show, we still have a round of boys as we pay homage to Gary. We still do that. So it just sets a good tone for everybody.
So I've got an addition to that story. Okay, so now I moved from the gypsy life, went into education, became a teacher, was teaching video productions. And because of my background, I sort of gravitated towards, we needed one of the teachers to be the director. So I figured there's probably going to be no middle ground. It's either going to be I'm okay, or I should just stay doing camera. And I have to say, it was so much fun to direct students. Like all of the good directors that I had in my head.
Yeah, plenty, sure.
I say all that to say, I don't recall what the event was, but the shot, camera's in the background, and I say, so-and-so, lift your left leg. And they did it.
Love it. And they did it.
I just wanted to say, it lives on.
Oh, that's great. The tradition continues.
The tradition continues.
I love it. Well, good. That's great.
So tell me, what is your, in all of that golf directing, what is your favorite memory? And I know you love them all. Pick one.
Hole-in-ones are fun. Hole-in-ones for the crew are fun to get, to capture. I had one last week. And the good news is everyone's just routine coverage at a par three, the ball rolls out, come back to the close. You know, once the hole in one happens, and I have two cameras at the tee, so it goes on, all of a sudden the camera that has the best close up is not available. It's blocked. There's another network camera in the way. Luckily, I had access to that camera, so we cut to the close-up. And then the cameraman that I had that got blocked, he said to himself, I'm going to get crowd. And the crowd's going nuts on the tee box. So that made for a great shot. Cut back to the close-up that I was able to access on the network. High fives are happening. So you have a nice, quiet sport. All of a sudden, things can happen that should not be missed. And the feels good when you can capture that. And the good news is I have, some of my cameramen have worn good shirts courtesy of me. The rule is if there's a hole in one and it's captured right way and the ball doesn't leave frame of the cameraman, I'll be sending them shirts. I've been doing this for 30 years, so. But I own a few golf shirts and belt buckles too of camera guys that played pong on the viewfinder, the ball hit every corner basically, and maybe left right. And they're upset at themselves. I'm not upset. You know, they understand the ultimate is not to lose the ball, to give the viewer the ultimate coverage. And I'm glad to ship shirts all over the country to my crew that capture those hole-in-ones. So the hole-in-ones are fun.
That's awesome. Do you have a favorite open memory?
Let's see.
Putting you on the spot.
My youth, it's good. I was actually a TD. My first master, I've only done a handful. They've always been either a world feed or a feature group feed, let's say. My first one was 86. And a good golfer from Ohio one named Jack Nicklaus. So that was pretty cool to be part of. With the British Open 2015, Zach Johnson wins. That was great. But, you know, I'll even do any event. It could be a non-signature event. You treat every event like it's a major, let's say. And the majors, you treat them like every event. So you just try to make all your cuts as tight as they can be, just because the viewer needs to be told the storyline. And throughout the broadcast, I'm always showing the flag, relationship to the golfer in the fairway. You can only assume the viewer might have just tuned in. So there's not really a favorite event. It's just I treat everyone at the top level, like all directors do too. So that's what makes it fun.
I don't know if it's my favorite memory, but it was definitely burned in my memory. In 2000 at Pebble, Tiger's lapping the field, and we have a fog out on Friday.
Wow.
So we got to play the end of Friday's round on Saturday, and it's still foggy. Now, it's supposed to burn off. They send him out, and Tiger didn't tee off. I was on the fifth hole, par three, right next to the ocean, and that's everybody's got to start where they left off. And my first shot of the day is going to be Tiger Woods in the year 2000 teeing off, and there's a ton of fog. I could barely see the tee, and that's not a long hole. And
you're the coverage. You're the shot. You don't have amateurs to warm up with. You don't have multiple golfers coming out of the hole first. All of a sudden, Tiger puts the ball down, and he swings, and you're throwing it.
And as he's spiking it in the turf, Bucky Guntz, who directed NBC for years and years, real quiet, almost a whisper, he goes, T-Mac, good luck. And I'm like, that's all you got, Bucky. Good luck.
That's right.
So he hits it. Of course, it goes up into the fog. And here's, you'll back me up on this. General of thumb is, don't act like you lost it. Up, and you've made the move at this point. I've made the move 1,000 times already. So up I go. I own this. And I come back down. And as I come back down and I stop, I hear kerplunk. And it was almost out, but I counted it, and then I just kind of eased over a little bit, and then I didn't want to do anything else, and I just stopped. And Bucky goes, nice work.
You knew how tough that was for you, and video hadn't seen the reaction of what that sky would be or fog. Amazing. Well done.
It's the one I remember. I mean, you know, there's golf memorable moments, but I'm a camera nerd. That was that's the one I remember.
Congrats. Well, camera, again, for your viewers, camera on golf. I think everyone can imagine. Not a big basketball, not a football. Golf into a white sky. Whoa. That's amazing. So kudos to you.
Lots of little tricks I learned from veterans, how to play with contrast. All those years, I never used color in the viewfinder. I was always black and white, and then would play with blue and green and figure out which one. Mm-hmm. So I was chasing a gray dot in a gray dot in a light gray sky. And I forget who told me about that.
Boy, like you said, some veteran guy that liked you enough to share.
Exactly.
That's smart that you knew it took 2.5 seconds for the ball to land.
Correct.
You just had to do that. And sometimes a camera guy will miss the ball, even on a sunny day, and it'll drop. But then again, we kind of make light of it. I'll just say, Sir Isaac Newton, you know, like it's an apple that just fell out of the sky. Because the camera guy probably beating himself up, but I just want to reassure him that it's not the end of the world.
And I would smile and I would say, sure. Yeah, man, he gets it. He's with me.
Right.
Moving on.
Exactly. Cool.
So sports and golf are not the only things you direct. And I got to admit, I did a little research on you and I went, oh, and it isn't that you're doing this, but you've done it for years, sir. Tell me what else you've been directing for how many years?
Yeah, well, luckily, New York was a good place to be based for sports, of course. But also there's the entertainment industry from New York, Philharmonic, you know, operas at the Met, Carnegie Hall, MTV Unplugged. There's a lot of different things in my youth. That I did on the technical side. And then later on in life, I evolved to where I'm still doing the TD part of that. But I will direct an occasional opera, especially a lighting test. Yeah, with our main director, he won't come into New York for the five or six, you know, the first look-see we have. But I'll do those and enjoy it. And again, more of a team thing. I have a good score reader because I don't read music, but that person's kind of marked the script when the entrances happen, upstage, downstage, left, things like that. And the camera operators are hearing that as well. So that's another team stuff event. But there, every shot is predicted. Once we get to the final air show, which is broadcast around the world in seven languages, every shot, even audience shots, all have a number. And in a perfect world, as long as we don't lose a camera and et cetera, sometimes the director wants spilled Gatorade in the switcher, so we were stuck on one camera for 20 minutes. The phones didn't light it up. People around the world just saw this one shot, and life went on. So, but anyway, the entertainment world is fun in its own right, but a lot of the same rules apply. So that's what makes it fun.
How many times have you seen it before you go live?
Well, the show. Opera, we'll see. Yeah. The opera is really a good example. We'll see this lighting test. And then we'll have all the cameras together on a Tuesday night. And Saturday, we're live for a matinee. So we'll shoot it Tuesday night. Director takes his notes. Thursday, Friday, we just watch the opera. We watch a multi-screen of all the cameras, but we can also access the wide shot of the house and also the big program cut. And all have camera numbers. Those are burnt in, so we know exactly what camera is on the air. In case the director was fishing for shots and he just started taking cameras, we'll know what camera that was. So it's a very good process. And our team has taken this to Europe, West Coast as well, because it's a crew you need to have lots of reps as far as they know what a second violin looks like and the cello fingers, all those intricacies, which make it fun. So luckily I can be exposed to that world and still enjoying it as well.
I love that. I love, I was not a theater person, but I married a theater person, and I have seen the beauty of a really well-executed play and musical, and the high school kids are just, so my little contribution at our school is I shoot the dress rehearsals because they're in full, and it's full lighting, and many of the shows that they're doing, they only have performance rights, so don't want to tangle with the option that they've purchased. So I show up with my photography self, and I take a set of pictures for all the kids in it. It's hard, right, man? It's because I'm walking in cold, but it's so rewarding to have them say, "Yeah, this is the only chance they're gonna get to be photographed doing their thing."
No one's telling you where the next close-up should be either. You're following your own personal lead on that.
Last question. I'm sure you get it, because I know I get it all the time. Someone comes to you and says, what do I need to know to be in live television or live sports or even specifically golf or even opera and entertainment? Give me three things that you think would make a good technician, be it camera arts, playback, audio, whatever it may be. What do you think, or what would you tell them they should focus on? Give me three.
Every opportunity should be taken advantage of. If it's a last minute call, if someone reaches out, they need a cable puller, whether it's a basketball game or or symphony show, say yes to that. Just be amongst the production and have your eyes open, and you might see your future that day. So take advantage of it being driving 2 hours, not reimbursed for gas, you know, put yourself up. You know, don't make a habit of that. I'm just saying, there's no formula to this at all. So take advantage of every opportunity. That's rule number one. And rule number two is watch videos like this of other professionals, and there'll be something in there that person will take out of. And never forget to ask questions. Never, it's so easier now with the internet to watch a show. You can sometimes watch a show that has a control room only feed, so you'll see the production happen. There's a few that I'm impressed when I see directors I know and how they cut a live show. And those cameras sometimes are recorded and available. So and just watching TV, watching and listening to shows, you'll pick up so much. You'll see new toys that are now available. Obviously, the cable cams, the drones. That's opening up a whole new world. Operating a drone, anyone can buy the drone, not the professional drone, let's say, but can try to do all the stuff they're seeing. And it might be a day that the lead drone op is not available. And if you're on that show and someone says, hey, I've seen you work with your drone at lunch in the parking lot, you're it. So, hey, that's how Lenny Bernstein got his break years ago. He was the assistant to the main conductor. And the call to the bullpen went, and Lenny answered it, and the rest is history. So just make sure everyone takes every opportunity. That's what I can leave them with.
Emmett, I can't thank you enough for being a part of the project. I wish you safe travels.
T-Mac, real pleasure. Thanks for providing the service to the viewers all over the world. I think it's terrific. And make sure they all follow us and reach out to us if need be with questions anytime. Hey, people ask, all helped us many decades ago. So that's all we can do is help the future.
Talk to a pro.
Be well, my friend.
Thanks again to veteran television director Emmett Loughran. You can see his work on TV from a golf course near you and from the Broadway stage. The Zoom With Our Feet podcast is a production of TV Commando Media. The Zoom Pod theme is by Novembers and their funky groove, Cloud 10. Until next time, directors, start small and dream big.